There was a time when every young man would read the adventure stories written by Alexandre Dumas, like The Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo. And the reason that you would read them is not because they were thrilling adventures, although they were, not even because they had stock but finely etched characters, which they did, but because there were certain images that would stick with you. And I remember as a teenager when I read The Count of Monte Cristo, what stuck with me more than anything else were his years in a prison. He started to communicate by tapping on the wall with the person next to him. And the person next to him had spent years trying to tunnel his way out of the prison with a spoon. Every day putting the dirt back and then at night moving it and trying to tunnel. And finally, when he reached the other side, he realized that he had tunneled his way into another cell. Yeah, it's pretty discouraging. After all those years of work, you've gotten absolutely nowhere. But the metaphor was powerful, that sometimes we spend all our time escaping one situation only to end up in one that is virtually identical. And it also sparked imagination about something that actually is a very widespread human experience, although I venture to say only a small number of people in this room have ever undergone that experience, and that is life in prison. As a rabbi, not really expected to spend much time in prison. And no, I'm not about to shock you with a revelation about my past. I have, in fact, spent very little time in prison. A lot in Jewish summer camp, very little in prison. But I did once spend a summer, much of it in prison, not, I'm pleased to say, as an inmate, but as a teacher. And I went there because there was a man who at one time was very well known and had committed a crime. He was Jewish, so it was a financial crime. Now, I'm not stereotyping in any way. I'm just saying that it was. I know, it deserved that. Oh, right. You deserve better, but what can I tell you? But I went there because he decided in his years in prison, he's since been released, that he wanted to study Jewish philosophy. And so I would go once a week out to Lompoc prison and study Jewish philosophy with him. And part of the point that I want to make is that in some way, the fact that he wished to study Jewish philosophy when he was in prison teaches us something about our own lives. And it is paralleled in the story we read this morning. Joseph, as we know, is involved in dreams. And dreams are what get him in trouble. He tells his brothers that he has this dream that they bow down to him. And then he has a dream that not only his brothers, but his parents, one of whom has passed away, right? His mother, Rachel, but it doesn't matter. She bows down to him in the dream. And his brothers don't like it very much. And his father exacerbates the situation by giving him a ketonet pasim, which we usually translate as a coat of many colors, although the new JPS translation less lucidly and memorably calls it an ornamented tunic. The point is, it was a fancy garment, and everyone else got their stuff at Target. Joseph gets the coat from Barney's, and his brothers are jealous. And when his father sends him out to check on them, which was a foolish or perhaps unwittingly hostile maneuver, oh, your brothers hate you, go check on them when I'm not there. They decide to kill him. And they say, here comes the dreamer, contemptuously. But of course, they don't kill him in the end. They throw him into a pit, and they sell him into slavery, and he goes to Egypt. And as you heard this morning from our bar mitzvah, he ends up in Potiphar's house. Potiphar's wife has designs on him. He resists her. He ends up in prison. Now, it's worth thinking about the fact that Joseph is in prison for what it says about human nature, not only as a plot point. The rabbis notice that there's a gradual descent. He gets thrown into a pit. He goes down to Egypt. He goes to prison. In other words, he's hit rock bottom. And when he is in prison, as you know, he listens to the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker, and he interprets them, and that eventually leads to his liberation. It leads to his liberation because Pharaoh has his own dreams and is looking for a reliable interpreter. But this is what I want to point out. Dreams land Joseph in prison, but they don't, and that happens early on in his life when he's a kid. But they do not reappear in his life until he finds himself in prison again. In other words, Joseph has years of life that seem devoid of dreams, and then in prison, dreams reappear. The person whom I taught never showed any interest in studying Jewish philosophy, but in prison wanted to study. And you ask yourself, what is it about confining the body that can liberate the mind? Why is it at times when you put somebody in an impossible situation that they show this heroism of spirit and of intellect? Natan Sharansky. He was put in prison, and there in his mind played hundreds, perhaps thousands of games of chess in his head. Clung to his book of Psalms. Kept his independence of spirit. How do you do that? When your freedom of movement is restricted, when your will seems not to be your own, what is it about human beings that paradoxically liberates something in them when they are confined? Some of the greatest meditations in human history have been written by people who were in prison. Boethius, famously in philosophy and in our own tradition, Anne Frank. She was, after all, in prison when she wrote her diary. She couldn't leave. She couldn't go out. And yet there is a spark and a spirit and a freedom in the words that she writes that belies her physical situation. How does that happen? I think that at least part of the answer is that people are liberated because they're in prison. When you strip someone of all the accoutrements of life that we chase all the time, when they can't aspire to get nicer clothes or a nicer car or a nicer house or a better job because they just are where they are, all of a sudden, the only resources are internal resources. When we talk about resources, that is a person with resources, it's a euphemism. What does it mean? Money. But what happens when you don't have any resources in the external sense? Then all of a sudden, your only resources are the ones that are inside you. And yes, it could crush you. And surely many, many people have been crushed by confinement, but it also can liberate you. How is it, again and again and again, that the Jewish people survive different kinds of prisons? Even though we don't think about it, the desert, for all of its vast open space, was a kind of prison for the Israelites. They couldn't live their lives. They couldn't go anywhere. They didn't have free will. They couldn't have careers. They couldn't have lives. All they could do was walk day after day after day until they finally found a place where they could live. So why is it that the Torah is given in the desert? In the time of the holiday that we celebrate, in the time of Hanukkah, the Jews were effectively in a prison. They had no self-government, no free will, no opportunity to make their lives until they revolted. And yet they kept that same spirit. And what it teaches, and what I think the tradition tries to teach again and again and again by giving us examples of people whose world narrows and whose spirit expands, is that the trick of life is to expand your spirit when you're not in confinement. The trick of life is not to be seduced by the possibilities of freedom into ignoring all of the resources that you have inside you. Rabbi Aryeh Levin, who was called the Tzaddik of Jerusalem, the righteous man of Jerusalem, spent most of his time visiting Jewish prisoners. And once a prisoner said to him, "How can I celebrate Passover? Because after all, Passover is the holiday of freedom, and I'm in jail." And I want to read you what Rabbi Aryeh said. He said, "Every man is in a prison of his own self. He cannot leave by going out of the house, but only through the door of his heart. And to make an opening for himself in his own heart, that anyone can do, even a prisoner behind bars. And then he will know true spiritual freedom." In other words, yes, the physical confinement is onerous, but that's not the only confinement. True freedom is internal, and if we are too enslaved to that which is outside of us, we never achieve it. That's part of the message of what Joseph teaches us. Yeah, he was in prison, but he still had and could hear dreams. And it's part of the message of Hanukkah. You know that Hanukkah is a holiday that is really about not just bringing light to darkness, but ultimately, just like Pesach, about a different kind of freedom. But it is a spiritual freedom more than a political freedom. You and I both know that even though we are free in ways unimaginable to our ancestors, that we confine ourselves in all sorts of ways. In terms of our tradition, in terms of the embarrassment that we feel to be Jews in a society where there is a minority of Jews, the way in which, as we leave the synagogue, the first thing that everybody does is take the kippah off, because you don't want to be seen on the street with it, because that will mark you. It's a kind of prison when you can't dress the way you want, or be the way you want, or worship the way you want. And that's why Hanukkah forces you to put the Chanukiah in the window. It's a declaration that this is who I am, and to be able to assert who you truly are is the only way to be free. As long as you are compelled to assume an identity that is not yours, you're a slave. So in Potiphar's house, Joseph was a slave because he had to be a certain way. Once he asserted himself and went to prison, all of a sudden, paradoxically again, he was free. All of our tradition in some ways is a meditation on freedom, deep freedom, which we learn is not only about our relationship with each other, but our relationship to God. Because ultimately, if you live your life in a way that you believe will please transcendence, that which is beyond us, that which is greater than us, then you live free. In the deserts of the heart, wrote Auden, Let the healing fountain start. In the prison of his days, teach the free man how to praise. We all, in different ways, find ourselves confined, coerced, imprisoned. But the free man praises. The free man dreams. That can't be taken from you. It can't be taken from you in a Soviet prison. It can't be taken from you in confinement if you're hiding from the Gestapo. It can't even be taken from you in Beverly Hills. It is a freedom that starts from inside, that starts in your recognition of the sacredness of your own soul, in the certainty of your relationship with the one infinitely greater than any of us, in your ability to live the life that you were meant to live, not the one that you are told to live. In the prison of our days, teach us how to praise. Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph the Righteous, because despite the fact that he endured these hardships and confinement and hatreds, despite the fact that he was forced to live in a society that he didn't grow up in and didn't know, he was free. He was righteous. He was good. That's the message of Hanukkah. Put the Chanukiah in your window. Let others see it. Let them know who you are. Be free. Shabbat Shalom.